A terrifying mid-flight emergency forced an Alaska Airlines plane back to Portland earlier this month and launched an investigation that temporarily grounded fleets of Boeing 737 MAX 9 passenger jets nationwide. I'm Elliot Noose, and this is Beat Check with The Oregonian. Miraculously, nobody on Alaska Airlines Flight 1282 was critically hurt when a door plug, that's a wall panel that's used as an emergency exit on some planes, but just a window on others, suddenly blew off, leaving a hole in the side of the plane. Here's how one of the pilots on that flight reported the emergency.
Hey, Portland Approach, Alaska 1282, emergency aircraft now leveling 12,000 in a left turn heading 340.
Alaska 1282, did you declare an emergency or just need to return to
the... Yes, we are emergency. We are depressurized. We do need to return back to. We have 177 passengers. Still is 18-8.
The cabin had depressurized and passengers put on oxygen masks while the plane dropped to a lower altitude before making an emergency landing at PDX. Reporters Zane Sparling and Maxine Bernstein were among the team of reporters who spoke to investigators and shaken passengers, and they're here to discuss their reporting. Max, Zane, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Max, Elliot, good to be back.
Zane, you ended up with the first byline on the initial story from the Oregonian and Oregon Live. How did you get onto it?
Elliot, it was a pretty typical evening. I was done with work for the day. I was still downtown, and suddenly my phone is lighting up with messages internally from other coworkers on Slack, and it's really just all systems firing at once when you realize you're being called back into this sort of breaking news scenario, particularly here, because while we've all sort of now become aviation experts and can quite easily distinguish between a door plug and a plugged door, at the time, all I knew was there's a hole in a plane and how terrifying that must have been for everyone on board. And I really want to credit the team effort because I was not the only person working on this the night that we all learned that this Alaska Airlines MAX 9 had returned to PDX. We had Ryan Fernandez manning social media. And what that really means is we're seeing these firsthand accounts emerging, photos, videos. And Ryan was really helpful in connecting me with people who were on that flight just by messaging them over Twitter and TikTok. And that allowed us to get things going right away.
When you were, you know, rushing back to the office and you heard about a flight returning and a hole in the plane and all of that, did you know that it had landed safely, that it, you know, that the passengers were all right, or was that were you still sort of in the dark on that?
I did know that the plane had landed safely. Of course, your first thought when you see a hole on a plane is, has this been an explosive depressurization? I didn't know that every passenger was relatively uninjured at that point. So of course we're concerned that someone could have really been sucked out of the plane, right? Like Harrison Ford on Air Force One or something like that. Luckily that didn't happen, but I didn't know that at the time. And of course my mind is going back because it's only been a couple of months as a regular news consumer will remember since another plane was forced to land at PDX and the pilot was of course charged with attempting to cut the engines of that Alaska Airlines flight. So, and Max and I have both reported on that story. Now, this ended up being a completely different thing, but at the moment, I didn't know whether this was an accident, potentially a malfunction, or was it sabotage?
So you have all of this, sort of real-time information coming in on social media from passengers and observers at the airport and stuff. How did you get into reporting on that and trying to figure out, you know, what had happened and how to interpret what you were seeing?
Yeah, so I was really juggling three different things at once. One, I'm checking the feeds that Ryan and other users were putting into Slack so I could see these new updates and social media posts. But I was also pretty quickly on the phone with one of the passengers, Elizabeth Lee. She was still at Portland International Airport. I could hear her friends talking to her in the background. I could hear gate agents trying to sort of shepherd these people onto new flights. And of course, at the same time, Elizabeth had just had this very traumatic experience. She, I think like everyone on board, she thought she was going to die there. And what it was supposed to be a girls' trip to Ontario, California had transformed into this horrifying thing. Those initial accounts from eyewitnesses are so compelling. And to hear And to try and, as a journalist, of course, you need to get that information out to the public, but you also need to be approaching someone in a trauma-informed way, you know, respecting, you know, whatever emotions they're processing. So I was doing that. I was actually texting with another passenger who couldn't get on the phone because he was with his family. And I'm looking at the messages that are coming in from my coworkers, the updates, the process we're doing to get this story up and edited as soon as possible.
And I think that you you saw and obtained some of the first some of the footage that the passengers on the plane were kind of filming while they were in midair and sort of strapped into their seats with very little else to do other than wait for the plane to get back to the airport. Can you describe what the scene looked like on the plane based on what you saw?
Yeah. So we've all been on planes. I think we've all had that thought run through our mind when maybe there's just even a little bit of turbulence about what if something went wrong, even though, of course, commercial aviation is incredibly safe in this country. This was particularly moving, not because of just the visual of seeing that really, I mean, it looks like a chasm in the night sky, right? I mean, it's almost surreal. That was so striking, but also the stillness, right? Kyle Rinker, another passenger, texted me and he said it was deathly silent on the plane after that initial blowout. And I think what's really interesting about that is none of us really know how we'd react in that sort of life or death situation. Certainly you can imagine praying maybe for the first time, holding hands with a loved one, but you can also imagine someone getting hysterical and screaming, right? I mean, that maybe I would be screaming. I don't know. So to know that everyone kind of just was collectively holding their breath on that passenger flight is a really striking part of the story to me. And I think the other interesting thing about that footage is that you can actually hear passengers clapping when they landed, which is something that you don't see very often on flights anymore.
Max, you talked to some other passengers who were on the plane later on. What did they tell you about their experience?
Yeah, they really helped walk me through what happened from the moment the plane, took off. The plane was about 20 minutes late on takeoff, and I spoke to a Portland architect, Nick Hoke, who was flying to see his girlfriend in California, and he was in a window seat in row 12A window seat. And he described that they were about 5 to 10 minutes into the flight when he suddenly heard a loud boom, a pop. It sounded to him like an explosion in the further back part of the plane. And suddenly it felt like the cabin was depressurized and the oxygen mask dropped right in front of him. He remembers like fumbling with the mask to put it on over his mouth, and he was concerned the bag wouldn't blow up, wouldn't fill. And he said, there was this vapor in front of him from the condensation, he realized later. And he just was like, he was looking around, and it was after that big loud pop and boom, it was suddenly just silence. And people are wondering, he was wondering what happened. There was, a flight attendant came over the intercom in a real tense, serious voice to put on your oxygen mask, stay in your seat. And that kind of just the tone of her voice cemented to him that this, whatever was going on, was very serious. I also spoke to a grandmother from Washington State who was flying with her two young grandchildren, ages 5 and 7. And she described this like sudden push forward in her seat as if she likened it to someone riding in a car and the driver slams on the brakes and you go flying forward. And then this like heavy wind that pushed them back into the seat and the oxygen masks come down. And she, her 7-year-old grandson is in the window seat and, he sees the mask and he says, you know, Grammy, are we supposed to put this on? And she's like, yes, he puts, you know, she said he was a champ, put his mask on, and she put on her own mask and helped her granddaughter, age 5, who was in the middle seat next to her. She held their hands and, you know, together they said a prayer for their safety. She thought the smoke in the air, the vapor, she thought it was smoke. So she took her mask off momentarily to see what it was. And she turned her head to the left. And that's when she, for the first time, noticed the hole in the fuselage. She's an emergency. She's a nurse, a longtime nurse. And she told me she's used to emergencies because I don't know how, you know, generally a grandmother with 2 young grandchildren is going to react. You're always, as a parent, told, you know, the kids feed off how you react. And so she was calm and kept her grandchildren calm throughout. Several of the passengers said they had Alaska Wi-Fi is free, so they were able to text their loved ones. And the Nick Hoke, at one point, just not, he felt the plane rapidly going down in altitude. He thought they were falling. Are we falling out of the sky? And there was not a lot of information shared at that time. So he got on a text message with his girlfriend and told her something's wrong, something seriously wrong. And you know, she remarkably was really supportive and, you know, saying, well, it looks like you're turning around, because he was noticing the plane made really sharp bank turns to the right. And she was saying, well, it's a good thing this happened, you know, early on and you're turning around, but there was,
and this is all while they're in midair, right?
Looking
at the flight path online or something like that.
Presumably during their whole text screen. And he shared with us the text, screen, like a running video of their back and forth text exchange. And then the plane was about at 16,000 feet when the plug blew out of the plane and it lowered, it came down pretty low. And then he described it as finally like leveling out, and he felt at least safer at that point. And though there was some silence during that, at one point, there was a woman he described in the back who just kind of stood up and just yelled that a man's shirt just got sucked off his chest. And then after that, another man behind him, you know, took off his mask, unbuckled his seatbelt, and stood up and pointed, there's an effing hole in our plane. There's, you know, and he shouted that twice, and that's not supposed to be there. And he said that just like made everyone really anxious. And he was in row 12, so that was much further back, but he was like, please sit down. And then the flight attendant got back on the intercom and must have noticed this and said, please remain in your seat, keep your oxygen masks on, et cetera. And anyway, then he described it as, you know, it felt like forever, but it was really, this occurred over minutes. And the plane, the captain came on and alerted them that the plane was going to land, and to stay in their seats. And, you know, they kind of braced themselves, but landed safely. And then he described how surreal it was because people just like got their belongings and deboarded the plane, got off the plane like it was any other normal flight. And he thought that was just really odd. And that was after, once they landed, there were medics that were waiting who came on and came to help there was a 15-year-old who had his shirt blown off and was able to get to the other side of the plane.
Yeah, really an incredible scene. And as you both mentioned, very lucky. It seems that it occurred when it did in the flight at, you know, relatively low altitude. This door plug was next to two empty seats, right? No one was sitting right next to where the hole in the plane was. Max, you mentioned Vicky Krepps, the grandmother who was traveling with her two grandkids. One of them is named Brady. Brady is seven. Vicky recorded a short clip of Brady recounting this. I'm going to play that now.
I was sitting down watching a movie. All of a sudden, I just look forward to this big blush of wind in my face. Then these masks come down. And then I put it on, and I just breathe through. And that's because I want to be safe. I don't want to do anything bad. But there's a 1 billion chance of that happening. So it's so lucky that I got to experience it.
An interesting take on things. Optimistic look at it. Max, why did Vicky record that little clip?
Yeah, so Vicky recorded a couple of clips with her grandchildren afterwards. I think she was helping them process what they had just been through. I think there's been a lot of media coverage of this flight, and she told me her seven-year-old wanted to be interviewed by the media. And so she, you know, took out her phone and did this mock interview with him, and that's what you see there. The 5-year-old acknowledged, "Were you scared?" And she goes, "I was scared." And then he says, "I was half scared." But they went on to also, he wanted to make this a learning experience as well for other kids. And he clearly, he's holding that aircraft safety card that everyone finds in the back of the seat in front of them and probably don't read it as well as Brady is now. He wanted to make sure other kids recognize the importance of paying attention to that safety card and the instructions on it, because they did, and that's what helped them get through this flight successfully. So that was the point of that. But the grandma said she was really trying to help them. She thought it would be healing for them to talk about what they went through and use it to help others.
And remarkably, I think they were on the plane back to California the very next day. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, so a lot of the passengers, once they got off the plane, they were told they could go to a certain gate to try to figure out whether they'll get on another plane or change their plans. She decided that after that, she was just going to take her grandkids back home to her house in Washington State, that it was too late. She didn't want to. She felt that they needed some security after that. So she brought them home, but organized to get on a flight the next day, the next morning, back to their parents in California. They flew the next morning, and I think she continued to videotape them while they were waiting for the flight. And in one video, you see at the end of their lesson or their message to other kids, they each get a Starbucks pink drink and they clink it, and then they get back on their next flight to fly home to their parents.
Max, I think those stories of how they're kind of, one, the return to normality, but also it was really heartwarming to see the kids' perspective on that. You know, I think it's really great that Max, that you're able to get both those text messages from the couple, but also, yeah, the grandmother's perspective was really, really made this from a breaking news story into something where the real people were involved, and we could see how they processed it.
Of course, the story didn't end with the breaking news piece of it. Almost as soon as the plane was back on the ground, the investigation began into exactly what went wrong. The National Transportation Safety Board, which investigates aviation crashes and other transportation incidents, I think was on the ground in Portland in a matter of just a few hours. And I think they were particularly interested in recovering that door plug, which, because it fell off the plane, was somewhere along the flight path. And for a good couple of days, I think it was not. The incident happened Friday night, and they didn't find the door plug until Sunday. Is that right? I believe it was Sunday evening and
Sunday night.
Yeah. Max, you tracked down the guy who found the door plug, found it in his yard. Let's hear from that man, Bob Sauer.
Late Sunday afternoon, a friend of mine called me and said, "You should probably check your backyard because they think it fell in our neighborhood." So I still wasn't in that much of a hurry to go out. I had other things I had to finish. So I did that for a while. And then I got my flashlight and went out to look in the backyard because it was dark by this time. And my kids and I planted trees in the backyard 20 years ago, and they've gotten really big now. So that backyard's pretty dark. So I got around the corner and with my flashlight and the beam, there was something white underneath the trees where there shouldn't have been something white. So I went back to look at it, and it was the missing piece from the airplane.
Max, how do you find Bob?
So it wasn't just me. It was also with the help of others who were working at their desks and scouring social media, et cetera. But I had listened on my own. It was Sunday night to the NTSB briefing. And I recall hearing the chair announce that the door plug had been located and mentioned that NTSB planned to retrieve it the next morning. And it said it was in the area of, it was found by a Portland teacher in the area of Barnes Road and 217. So the next morning on Slack, you know, everyone wants to find who's Bob, who's Portland Bob. And so I thought, you know, we should go out there. We should go out to that area, 217 and Barnes. Maybe they're still out there. Maybe somebody saw NTSB van or noticed them retrieving this door plug. So I volunteered to do that. And I went to 217 and Barnes. And we have another editor, Kirsten Gabrielson, who lives in the area. And she suggested stopping by a popular bagel shop, Sunrise Bagels, I think, which is right in a strip mall right near that intersection. And I went there, and one of the men working behind the counter, he said, "Oh, we were just talking about the discovery of the plug." And he said he heard there were phones that were found, and he just kind of points the direction near Taylor Street. So, you know, I'm looking up where Taylor, I get back in the car and I see there's actually a Beaverton police patrol car that's just parked in this strip mall. So I drive up to the driver's side of the door, like police do, and I asked, "Hey, you know, do you know where this door plug was found?" And he said he had no idea, that he actually read it in the Oregonian that it was discovered, but he did not know. Anyway, so then from there, I continued on to Taylor Street. Meanwhile, our breaking news editor, Beth Slavik, is also monitoring the Slack channels. And Kirsten, again, finds something on a Facebook group for the Cedar Mill neighborhood, a photo of the door plug on someone's front lawn. And so I enter that Facebook group. I try to contact the person who posted the photo. Beth Slavik is working as well, and she's trying to trace the name of the person whose photo it is. and gets an address. So I went up and down. Taylor Street is a pretty, it's a hilly street. I went up to the top, didn't notice anything. I drove back down, didn't notice anything. But as soon as we had an address of someone who took the photo, I went to that address, which wasn't far from Taylor Street. And when I got there, the son, who's a junior in high school, told me that his dad was driving him to high school that morning, and they thought they saw a car accident on a front lawn, but then they circled back and realized, oh, that's the door plug. That's the NTSB on the front lawn. And they took a video of it as they're driving by. So I asked him if he could take me to that location where it was. He got in my car and I drove. He showed me where to go and he took me to the home. And meanwhile, Beth Slavik at the office is, you know, is checking addresses on Taylor Street and finds there's a Bob. We're looking for a Bob. And hey, that Bob is a teacher at Catlin Gable, science teacher. So I rang the doorbell. Nobody's home. And Beth, meanwhile, from the office, is calling Catlin Gable. And there's Bob Sauer, we learn, is the gentleman who's found the door plug on his property after I'll tell you what he said. But anyway, we arranged to interview him at Catlin Gable that afternoon, like at 1:15, and we got to meet him in his science room at Catlin Gable, and he sat down and explained to us that he was oblivious about, you know, where this part of the plane ended up or in what neighborhood. He was monitoring, you know, through radio news, he was monitoring what had happened, but he wasn't paying attention to where it fell or where it was supposed to have fallen until his ex-wife, he says his friend in the video. Later I asked him who was the friend, and he said it was his ex-wife who called him and said, hey, there, you know, people are looking all around that neighborhood. You should probably check the property. And that's when he said he went out that night. And it was about, he got the call about 8 p.m. and went out that night. And that's when he noticed the white gleaming in his cedar trees. And that occurred while the NTSB was holding a press conference that night, Sunday night. And when they started the press conference, like at 8 p.m., they didn't know the door plug had been located. But he, you know, he was looking up numbers on the internet on how to contact NTSB. And then during or towards the end of the NTSB briefing, the chair acknowledged that first they said it hadn't been found. And then by the end of the briefing, they said, well, we have a change of events. We've just been contacted by Portland's Bob, and who they were very grateful. He said they were so excited that that had been located and that it had been located in one piece. And they came the next morning to his property to retrieve it, take photos of it, and they plan to ship it back to their lab in Washington, D.C.
Very dramatic timing, at the very least, breaking into an ongoing press conference. Since all this has unfolded, the 737 MAX 9 planes, like this one, all the ones that have included these door plugs have been grounded by the Federal Aviation Administration. The agency is investigating Boeing's manufacturing and quality control to see if they failed to produce the plane safely or to catch the mistakes, to catch mistakes on the production line. This is, you know, obviously affects flights that are occurring all over the world. It captured the imagination of people all over the world the flying public. And it's really rare that a big sort of international breaking news story unfolds right here in our backyard. Very literally in the case of Bob. So what was it like with journalists from all over kind of jostling for a piece of the story and trying to get you know, trying to get many of the same passengers and get a sense of what was happening.
You know, I can speak on that a little bit. I know that one thing that is always frustrating for people who are experiencing these internationally newsworthy events is that it oftentimes a normal person feels like, well, I've told my story. I told it to person A, I told it to person B, and they don't necessarily understand, or maybe they do understand, but they understand. They don't. The reality is that every single outlet wants to talk to these people. Every single outlet wants them to tell their story again to them, and so they can put their own spin on it and they don't have to aggregate other reports. And I know that for the people I talked to, Elizabeth went on to speak with the New York Times. Kyle did a video interview of CNN. So they did go and give a few other interviews after I spoke to them first. But after that, I heard from both of them that they were getting a lot of a deluge of media contacts. And I think it can be frustrating for people when they just feel like, I've told my story. I might not have told it to you specifically, but I have told my story. Of course, from the reporter's perspective, we are always trying to get the exclusive, get the scoop. And so I think that Max, you know, you had a great job. You got that interview with Bob. I know he spoke to another outlet, but yours was up first. I mean, we were really gunning to get the news out to people as fast as we could.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a chase of sorts, working to find people and get the interviews and learn the information and provide it to readers. But that's, you know, that's what our breaking news team is used to. Here it's on, you know, a national story that basically dropped in our laps. And it's important that we all, you know, work to chase down the details and the information and to provide it to readers. The passengers I spoke to, you know, one, Nick's Portland resident. And he told me, you know, he feels an affinity towards the Oregonian, and talking to us, he actually turned down CNN. So of course that put a smile on my face, but, and I think there's, you know, others after other passengers, 'cause they are bombarded by reporters from everywhere. And at least the passengers I spoke to were pretty gracious and accommodating and wanted to tell their stories. One thing Nick Hoke asked, that, you know, he wants to speak to the other passengers who went through this, and everyone kind of, even after they got off the plane and he waited to book another plane and they were all in line, he said he waited for 3 hours. He said few people were talking to one another about it. They were all like on their phones telling their loved ones that they were okay and communicating, but didn't really talk among themselves. He got on another plane later that night that was a replacement flight for this Alaska flight that returned to Portland. And he said the drinks were free, the food was free. He ordered a gin and tonic and just talked to another man who had gone through it as well. And they were like, holy cow, what just happened? And discussed it. But he was really, he's very interested in you know, talking and to other passengers to try to help him process everything that they went through.
Not a lot of people who share that experience. Max, Zane, what's your sense of what comes next in this story?
Yeah, well, at the time of our recording of this podcast, we've just learned that the FAA will be, you know, auditing Boeing and its suppliers, trying to assess whether the production of the 737 MAX 9, you know, was following those quality controls that they expect of any airline manufacturer. So I think we're all going to see what effect that has on Boeing, right, which does have a presence here in Oregon, though it's mostly based in Seattle area. So I think that's something we're still waiting for. Of course, when it comes to the actual investigation into the loss of this door plug on the fuselage, I think that's something that could potentially lead to emergency findings at any point, or it could take as long as 18 months. So, right. So it's a story we're going to be continuing to follow for a while.
Yeah. And of course, there were no fatalities, no real critical injuries, but six passengers have sued Boeing over the incident. One of them in the lawsuit says that they suffered a concussion and some neck injuries and ear bleeding. Another says that they suffered a stress-induced seizure after landing. That's according to reporting from the Seattle Times. Those six passengers are asking for that lawsuit to become a class action lawsuit on behalf of all of the passengers on board as other investigations continue. Max, Zane, I want to thank both of you for coming on Beat Check today and talking about your reporting.
Thank you so much, Elliot.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning in to Beat Check with the Oregonian. If you like the show, give us a 5-star rating and review in Apple Podcasts. It really helps people find the show. Or you can tell a friend. The best way to support our local journalism and reporting like this is with a subscription to The Oregonian and Oregon Live. You can do that at oregonlive.com/podsupport. Until next time.